If members can take their seats and if our audience can quiet down a little bit, I call this meeting of the Committee on Health and Human Service Policy to order. There is a quorum present. May I have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
So moved, Representative Primary approved, moves approval of the minute for February the 11th. Any discussion? Hearing none. Those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for Tuesday, February 11th are approved. So I would like to move House File 349 for re-referral to the Committee of Foreign Commerce. So the bill is before us. Representative Haverson, can you introduce yourself and proceed with the testimony?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, if you would be able, there also is an A5 amendment. It is an author's amendment. If you would be willing to move that bill, that amendment, and then I would be in the shape that I would like.
Okay. We want to entertain the motion on the A5 amendment. Anyone, in support of the amendment, say aye.
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 Mm-hmm. Representative Edison moves the A5 amendment. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Any discussion? The amendment is not moved.
We're just enthusiastic country.
All right, to Representative Haverson, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I'm very pleased to be here today and kick off the first of three bills that are going to address youth smoking in the state of Minnesota and the impact and the cost of tobacco use in the state of Minnesota. Minnesota, as we all know, has really been a leader as a state in terms of curbing youth tobacco use and access to tobacco, and we've seen incredible results over the years. Over the last 25 years, youth smoking rates have declined tremendously. And unfortunately, Minnesota is starting to lose some ground to the tobacco companies. And so we bring these bills forward today to make sure that Minnesota maintains its status as a leader in health and a leader in preventing youth from starting to smoke. I do want to thank right away the bipartisan group of authors that have signed on to this bill. It's really a joy to be able to work across the aisle when it comes to issues like the health of our kids. So thanks to all the authors, many of whom are here in this room, for signing on. Before I jump into the specifics of House File 349, I do want to just give a little context in general on the background of smoking in Minnesota. As I said, we've made great progress. In fact, in 2014, the Minnesota Youth Tobacco Survey found that the number of high schoolers who had used a tobacco product in the last 30 days was down to under 25%, which is the lowest rate since the year 2000. But we also know that the tobacco industry is relentless when it comes to targeting our kids, and they can continue to invest in new marketing tactics and new products to keep people addicted and to gain new customers, mostly teenagers and young people and vulnerable populations. And predictably, as a result of the huge onslaught of marketing and new products, our progress to reduce tobacco use is now slipping. In 2017, our youth tobacco rates went up for the first time in a generation. Youth are now using tobacco products like Juul that are flavored, easy to hide, and contain incredibly high levels of nicotine. One Juul cartridge can contain enough nicotine to equal a pack of cigarettes. One small cartridge. And kids are using these every day in our schools, in our parks, and around the state. And yesterday, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention released new data on the vaping epidemic. The CDC reports that there were 1.5 million more current youth e-cigarette users in 2018 than in 2017. 1.5 million kids took up e-cigarettes in 1 year.
From 2017 to 2018, there was a 38% increase in high school students using any tobacco products. The latest data from the 2017 Minnesota Youth Tobacco Survey found that 1 in 5 high school students is using e-cigarettes, and nearly 40% have tried them. Let that sink in. Think about the number of kids that is in your districts, in your communities, or even in your household. It's alarming enough, but I think that if we had taken the survey more recently, we would find the numbers are higher when we look at the national data and the fact that youth e-cigarette uptake is increasing so rapidly. The tobacco companies have engaged for years in tactics to lure kids to tobacco, and they're doubling down on those efforts today, and we're seeing an uptake in tobacco product use among kids in rates that we haven't seen for decades. The approaches are not new. It's the same old wolf, different sheep's clothing. They say that their product is safer. They say that they are going to reduce harm. They flavor their products in flavors like gummy bear and unicorn poop, which is supposed to taste like Skittles. They use cartoons in their marketing. And we know these are tactics to target youth because of the historic lawsuits that Minnesota was involved in against the tobacco companies, where they had to open up their records to show how they were targeting youth. So the evidence is very clear. Our youth are being targeted. A recent study found that Juul, which dominates the e-cigarette market, explicitly marketed to youth, especially in the 6 months after they started up. They continue to directly market to youth for more than 2 years while addicting thousands upon thousands of high school students. They know where they'll be found by kids, and they pay for social media and attract users by online advertising. Now, some people dismiss the threat, saying that e-cigarettes are safer than combustible tobacco. But that's really giving us a false choice of what we're going to addict our kids to. The other thing is that nicotine is a health threat. If you've got kids ingesting that much nicotine that is in a Juul cartridge, they are having direct impacts on their brain development. There is strong neuroscience that shows an impact on brain development by the use of nicotine. In addition, anybody who uses e-cigarettes is also putting their cardiovascular system at risk, because we know that nicotine directly leads to atherosclerosis. E-cigarette vapor contains dangerous chemicals like formaldehyde, heavy metals, and other cancer-causing agents. The research also shows us that once kids start using e-cigarettes, they are much more likely to experiment with other tobacco products. Youth who use e-cigarettes are 2 times more likely to smoke cigarettes in the future. Somebody once said to me, I'd much rather find e-cigarettes in my kid's sock drawer than a pack of cigarettes. And I think that what the evidence shows us is that if you find e-cigarettes in your sock drawer, your kid's sock drawer one day, you're going to be finding combustible tobacco products another day. The U.S. Surgeon General warns that nicotine exposure does prime the brain for other addictions. We have also seen these kinds of tactics from the industry before, convincing us that their products are less harmful. We saw this with the marketing of light and mild cigarettes, which have now been prohibited. We also saw it in famous advertisements saying that doctors tended to choose Camels. I'm not buying the harm reduction arguments of e-cigarettes. These are strong, addictive substances, and we know that they're marketing to our kids. E-cigarettes are not quit smoking tools, no matter what people tell you. The e-cigarette manufacturers sued the FDA, so they did not have to be regulated as quit smoking tools. So under their own admission, they're not a quit smoking tool. But the other thing is that quit smoking tools are regulated by the FDA. They're science and evidence-based. You use them with your doctor. E-cigarettes are simply another tool for addiction, and our kids are the target. House File 349 before you adds e-cigarettes to Minnesota's clean indoor air protections. The purpose of the bill is to protect employees and the public not only from the hazards of secondhand smoke, but also from involuntary exposure to aerosol from e-cigarettes. Currently, e-cigarettes containing nicotine are classified as tobacco products under state and federal law for tax purposes and youth access. However, there's a loophole in the Clean Indoor Air Act that does not cover e-cigarettes. This bill expands the definition of smoking to ensure that Minnesota's smoke-free air laws cover e-cigarettes wherever smoking is already prohibited. The expanded definition also ensures we're doing our best to cover the new products we're seeing now and anticipating into the future. The fact is, when I first came to the legislature, many people didn't even know what an e-cigarette was. I learned about it at an addiction conference when they were talking about brain development, and I got on the phone to MDH and I said, what is going on with the e-cigarette market? And it's grown that quickly. That was in 2013. And so we're trying our best through this legislation to anticipate what other products might be coming. We know we can't anticipate them all. But we do anticipate things like marijuana or other synthetic type products that could be vaped or smoked. Over 50 communities around the state have actually already incorporated e-cigarettes into their clean indoor air laws, and it's time for the rest of the state to be covered under these protections. It's an epidemic that we need to address, and we know that good public policy helps us reduce rates of smoking and helps reduce access and interest by our youth. And so I thank you all for being part of this hearing and considering this bill, and I would like to introduce Emily Wyatt to give a little bit more background from the American Cancer Society.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Wyatt.
Can
you please reintroduce yourself and begin your testimony?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in favor of Representative Halverson's bill. My name's Emily Myatt, and I'm the Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, the nonpartisan, nonprofit advocacy affiliate of the American Cancer Society. I'm here today representing Minnesota's cancer patients and survivors, many whom suffer from tobacco-related cancers. I'm also appearing on behalf of Minnesotans for Smoke-Free Generation, a coalition of 60 organizations supporting this legislation. We include the American Heart Association, Clearway Minnesota, North Point, the Health Plans, many provider groups, and the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce. Many of these organizations helped to fight to pass the Freedom to Breathe Act in 2007. Some of you might remember the controversy that once surrounded the law and how it took years to pass. But that controversy is also surprising because today, Freedom to Breathe is one of the most popular policies our state has ever seen. Minnesotans of all stripes agree that the legislature made the right call by prohibiting smoking indoors. It's a fact that the health of Minnesota is benefiting from Freedom to Breathe. Studies have found a decrease in exposure to the carcinogens found in secondhand smoke, as well as a reduction in heart attacks, which can be directly attributed to the law. The use of e-cigarettes in workplaces, including restaurants and bars, can undermine the public health benefits that continue to be achieved by Freedom to Breathe. We also know that the public wants e-cigarettes added to the law. In December, Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota conducted a statewide poll on the issue. Over 80% of Minnesotans support prohibiting e-cigarettes where smoking's already prohibited. It's hard to find any issue with such universal statewide support. In the same poll, nearly everyone, 98%, agreed that nicotine is harmful for young people, and they're right. Back in 2014, only a handful of communities had passed local policies adding e-cigarettes to their clean indoor air law, including Duluth and Mankato. City officials from these communities have testified that these policies have not hurt businesses. And since then, 50 more communities across the state have followed suit. When the 2007 law was written, e-cigarettes were practically unheard of. Its authors couldn't have imagined a time when 1 in 5 Minnesota students would report using e-cigarettes regularly. However, that's what we're facing today. Thankfully, the overwhelming public support for strengthening our clean indoor air reinforces that the proposal before you is wanted by the people of Minnesota. E-cigarette use is skyrocketing, and people do not want them to encroach on the clean air they've enjoyed and come to expect in public places for over a decade. And they don't want their kids exposed to a behavior that glamorizes and renormalizes nicotine and tobacco use. Included in your packet are letters of support from our coalition, as well as from the Building Owners and Managers Association and from the League of Minnesota Cities. You'll also find additional info on the poll methodology. I urge you to support this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Haverson, do you have any other testifiers? Ms. Cap O'Rourke? Please introduce yourself and continue with your testimony.
Thank you. Members, my name is Cap O'Rourke, and I work with a coalition of small business owners in Minnesota that manufacture and sell e-cigarette products or vapor products. I would like to just clarify a few points that were made by the chair. So e-cigarette products, vapor products came on the market around 2008 or 9. Right now it is probably about a $4 to $5 billion industry in the United States, the majority of which are actually sold by small business owners. Despite reports that Juul is the dominant player in the market, which they are within the convenience stores, the majority of these products are sold in small shops throughout the country and manufactured by small businesses and are often not actually sold in convenience stores. Our concern with the including vapor into the Clean Indoor Air Act, while we respect a lot of businesses, specifically those in bars and restaurants who have made the decision to prohibit using vaporizer products in there, our average customer is 38 years old, has been smoking, had smoked for 20-plus years, and has tried multiple quit attempts to fail. Oftentimes, they have found that e-cigarettes and vapor products do actually help them down the road to quitting, and our products are differentiate themselves because they're able to scale back the nicotine over time. Not all products on the market are able to go down to, we even have products that are at zero. And a number of adults who are using these products and using them at zero successfully to stay off cigarettes. So when we've had, our concern is not necessarily with the bars and restaurants that are everyone talks about, but it's more in the more common workplaces. You have a 20-year smoker who has successfully quit cigarettes for a period of time and is probably using their vapor device in their office or in their work location. And they're now told that that is not the case and they're going to have to go outside and smoke or vape next to the smokers. This is putting them in the exact same carcinogens and dangerous chemicals that they have took 20 years to get off of. And on the counterpoint, people would say, yes, but now you are subjecting other people to those same carcinogens or concerns and the chemicals coming out of vapor. The reality is, and the science actually is, that according to the CDC and according to the California Department of Health, who have both done indoor air studies in vapor shops where people were vaping and using these products for an entire workday, there was nothing that reached any dangerous level of any of the formaldehydes, the acetylides, any of the carcinogens, the nicotines, they were all well below OSHA standards for even nominal standards. And so the science that we had when we passed the Clean Indoor Air Act for smoking was overwhelming of the carcinogens and dangerous toxins that we were exposing people to. The science on vapor products, truthfully, is just simply not there on the level of toxins that may or may not be in the vapor product. In fact, the science says they're not there. These products are currently being prescribed overseas. They're currently being embraced in the UK as a cessation model. And so when we pass policies like this, it sends a message, as the author just said, that if you are using smoking cigarettes and you're considering using vapor products, it's the harm is the same. And the data just is not there. So we think including this in the Clean Indoor Air Act is going to send the wrong message and will put those people who have used vapor successfully to quit smoking back out next to the people who are smoking, and it will not have the same effect, and they could go back to smoking. So thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Do we have any additional testifiers from members in the audience? Okay. Do you have any questions from the members? Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm delighted that this bill is here, and thank you, Representative Haverson, for bringing it forward. And I recall in past testimony when we've discussed this topic that we've had testimony from a lot of people who make their own mixes and sell it on the retail market, and there is no knowledge, really, of what they're doing, what additives are adding, at what levels. It is not a standardized product. And are you aware that that's still a practice in the marketplace today in Minnesota?
Representative Halverson.
Madam Chair and Representative Loeffler, I know of no new regulations at the state level that provide for information regarding what goes into the consumer vaping products. We also don't have any standards of what's imported from overseas or testing. In fact, what we do know is that very often when products are tested, products that claim to have lower levels of nicotine or no nicotine actually are not labeled correctly. So there really aren't standards or rigorous oversight for that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Halverson. That was my understanding as well, that this is really kind of the Wild West, and we actually don't know, even the users don't know what they're exposing themselves to, let alone others.
Yeah, and, you know, I remember having this conversation, too, in this body a few years back when we was looking at menthol, nicotine, and have this conversation about the e-cigarettes, whether or not they was hazardous for you or whether or not they really had nicotine in them, you know. And now the news is, a few years later, that not only do they have nicotine, but one e-cigarette equal a pack of cigarettes. You know, so I just want to thank you for bringing this bill forward. You know, as we had this discussion around cigarettes back then, you know, someone want to smoke, go outside. You know, go outside and, you know, but the impact it has on individuals and the secondhand smoke, you know, is something that we need to be discussing here. And in a bill like this is what we need to have, that's requiring establishments to ask their patrons to take the e-cigarette outside. And so, again, just thank you. This is a bipartisan bill. And every now and then we get these good bills that come before us, like this one today. So do we have any other questions? Hearing none, Representative, the chair renews her motion to pass House File 349 and refer it to the... refer it to the Committee on Commerce. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? House File 349 is on its way to the Committee of Commerce. Thank you so much. Okay, our next bill is House File 350, Representative Mann.
I don't know who that is.
Representative May, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House File 350 be recommended for re-referral to the Committees on Ways and Means.
All right, the bill is before us. Could you introduce your bill?
Thank you. I did bring food, by the way, so there's that. So thank you, Madam Chair, representatives, for your time today, and thank you to all the co-authors of this bill, including Chair Moran, Representative Schumacher, Representative Albright, Representative Schultz, Representative Freiberg, and Representative Loeffler. What this bill does is provide funding for tobacco cessation services in the state of Minnesota by providing funding to the Department of Health to operate these services and ensure the continued quality of these services. QuitPlan, which is a service we currently have, will cease to exist in 2020, and that is where this bill comes in and picks up that service. If we don't pass this bill this session, we are going to be the only state in the country without such a program. As a physician, I watch many of my patients struggle with tobacco addiction daily. Tobacco addiction is aggressive, and tobacco remains one of the leading causes of preventable disease and death, killing over 1,000 people per day in this country. And also costs Minnesotans billions of dollars in health care costs and in loss of productivity. We know that helping people quit smoking saves money, but most importantly, it saves lives. There exist proven methods to help people quit, and this proposal would make it so that all Minnesotans will continue to have access to that support. So I thank you for your consideration, and I urge you to move this bill forward so that Minnesota is not the only state without this extremely important service. Next, I would like to introduce Amanda Jansen to testify.
Welcome to the committee. Reintroduce yourself and tell us who you're with.
Thank you. Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Amanda Jansen and I work for Clearway, Minnesota. I'm also here today on behalf of the Minnesotans for a Smoke-Free Generation Coalition. I would like to thank Representative Mann for championing this proposal and her many co-authors on this committee. Clearway, Minnesota is an independent nonprofit organization funded with 3% of Minnesota's tobacco settlement. Our mission is to enhance life in Minnesota by reducing commercial tobacco use and exposure to secondhand smoke through research, action, and collaboration. We were established as Life Limited, and we will sunset by 2022. For 18 years, we have operated Quit Plan services. These are effective, science-based programs that give Minnesota tobacco users free tools to quit. Quit Plan services includes phone counseling, medications, emails, text messaging, and self-help materials. Quit Plan has provided over 185,000 Minnesotans with the help they need to quit. Last year, almost 15,000 Minnesotans enrolled in the program. Even more, tobacco users look to us as a basic resource for information on quitting. Over 325,000 contacted us for information on smoking cessation last year alone. But as I said, Clearway is Life Limited, and the wind down of our organization is well underway. Quit Plan will end in just over a year. This bill provides funding to ensure Minnesota's commitment to helping smokers continues after Quit Plan services ends. As Representative Mann mentioned, all other states provide cessation services, and if the legislature does not take action this year, Minnesota will become the only state without these services. Smoking still takes a tremendous toll in lives and money in Minnesota, across the country, and around the world. Each year takes the lives of over 6,000 Minnesotans and costs each of us about $593 in smoking-related health care costs, even to those who don't smoke. In addition, smokers' health care costs average 34% higher than those of non-smokers. Over the last 20 years, Minnesota has seen great progress in reducing both youth and adult smoking overall, but high rates persist in many vulnerable populations. We know nearly 600,000 Minnesotans still smoke and that most want to quit. The good news is helping people quit is one of the most cost-effective health services. Research shows the cost of smoking cessation programs can be fully offset within 3 years. It's been our honor helping people quit commercial tobacco through Quit Plan, and now it's truly in all Minnesotans' best interest for this work to continue because it saves money and lives. Thank you.
Wow. Thank you for your testimony also. Do we have anyone in the audience who would like to testify? Okay. Any questions from the members? Representative New.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Mann, I think this is a great bill. I appreciate you bringing it forward. And I always like to look at the return on investment when we're spending government dollars. We should be looking at what we're getting back. And you had mentioned, I apologize, Ms. Jansen.
Mm-hmm.
You had mentioned that 325,000 contacts were made last year. Do you have any idea on how many people successfully quit smoking using these resources?
Yeah, Chair Moran and Representative New.
This is Jansen.
Our programs are very successful. So every year, back in 2017 was the last time that we did really an extensive evaluation on what we call quit rate. So how many people were successful in quitting? And our quit rate is just about 28%, which is in line with industry standards and other quit lines around the country. Just to give it some frame of reference, if someone were to try to quit cold turkey without any help, their success rate is about 3 to 5%.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Even though it's only 28%, that's a huge return on investment for relatively low dollars spent by the state, and I think a huge return on investment for what we're spending in health care costs and everything else. So thank you.
Okay. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, and thank you to Representative Mann for bringing forth this bill. I just had a question. My understanding is that when your group goes away, it's not clear who will administer the program going forward. And since you do have such a great track record, can someone explain to me how this grant will be administered or how it will, why you wouldn't be like sort of the right of first refusal when you already have sort of the pieces in place?
Thank you. Well, let's hope that's a win if.
Yeah.
Mrs. Jensen.
Yeah, Chair Moran, Representative Robbins. So Clearway, Minnesota was set up with the settlement to have an end date. So we are in statute that we will end. So this bill, what it does is it gives the dollars to the Minnesota Department of Health to run these services. So services like these in every other state are administered by the equivalent of the Department of Health. So it would be the Department of Health who would get the dollars. They would most likely contract with an outside vendor. There are a couple vendors that most state quitlines use throughout the country. We currently use Optum. And then that vendor is the one who is answering the phones and helping actually administer the services, providing the medical oversight for the different medications and that kind of thing.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up, so you're currently using that provider, so it would sort of be a seamless transition.
Ms. Jess.
Chair Moran and Representative, that would be up to the Department of Health on whether or not they wanted to use the same vendor or go out for a bid process or what their process would be for that. QuitPlan services will come to an end. And we have been working with the Department of Health to make sure that our good expertise and knowledge is transferred to them so they are ready, willing, and able to be able to kind of administer these services using whatever vendor they so choose.
Representative Ron. Mm-hmm. Chair Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Mann, thank you for bringing this. And this is really important stuff, and I agree with everything that's been said. My question is about the coordination with insurance, and maybe to Ms. Jansen, if you could sort of explain, you know, if we didn't pass this bill, what happens to these services? Because this is covered, I understand, under at least some insurance, maybe all insurance. I'm not really sure. That's really my question. Kind of who else would be doing this if there wasn't a coordinated effort from the Department of Health?
Ms. Jansen.
Chair Moran and Representative Liebling, that's a great question. So right now there are a lot of insurance products that do cover things like phone counseling and medications, but we do still have uninsured Minnesotans in the state who do access our services. We also have some Medicaid enrollees who do not have access to phone counseling. Currently, QuitPlan Services serves fee-for-service Medicaid enrollees who don't have access to that. We also know that there's a lot of variation still in the insurance market. So there's still a lot of Minnesotans who don't have access either to texting or emailing or medications or that phone counseling. So there is still a gap that QuitPlan Services currently fills that would be left wide open as a gap if the state weren't to administer their own similar services.
Chair Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so I do think it's very valuable to have one place that people know, and it's well advertised, and I've directed people there myself. Mm-hmm. But is there a, I mean, we can save this question really, but does QuitPlan has it, or in the next iteration, would they bill health insurance for some of those services so that there's a contribution when the services are provided through QuitPlan? And maybe we can, you know, if it's Medicaid, maybe we can get the match and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Jansen?
Yeah, Chair Moran and Representative Liebling, that's a great question. So in Minnesota, we are actually the envy of most other states. So we have our health plan partners also operate their own quit lines and other cessation services. And QuitPlan Services, along with the health plans who operate those and the Department of Health, actually have a collaborative called the Minnesota Quitline Referral Network. And that collaborative really brings us all to the same table to make sure that we are complementing each other's services and not duplicating. So the language you're noting in the bill just requires that partnership continues. And what we do right now is if someone would call QuitPlan, for example, and wanted to enroll in one of our services that we know one of our health plan partners offers, we offer a warm transfer to that helpline, for example, a Blue Cross or a Health Partners, that we would be able to transfer them to the correct service provider so that they could still receive service. So we're kind of, QuitPlan offers kind of that referral service. Some of the services we offer also, like email and text, are also available to all Minnesotans regardless of their insurance coverage. So we work closely with the health plans and work together to make sure everyone's covered with what they need to quit.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much for that. That's great. I mean, that's kind of the Minnesota way. Yeah. I really like that. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Representative Albright.
Ms. Jansen, on lines 1.15, and on line 1.18, Could you just give me an explanation in terms of what you mean by referrals in the context of the program? And then on line 1.18, if you could just elaborate in terms of what types of cessation medications are provided under that provision. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
This is Jansen.
Yeah. Chair Moran and Representative Albright. So the referrals line right there, right now we have a fax referral program that allows providers, healthcare providers throughout the state to refer their patients to quit lines. So it's a program that the Department of Health currently runs that allows a provider to fill out one form and then faxes it to one number, and on the back end they find out which one of the quit lines, whether it be Quit Plan Helpline or one of our health plan partners, would actually contact that patient back. So this allows them to continue that referral process to make sure that providers are being supported with these resources. The Food and Drug Administration approved tobacco cessation services, right now Quit Plan offers the patch, the gum, and the lozenge are the three that we offer. And those are pretty similar across quit lines in different states, but that's something that might vary and that the Department of Health could discuss options around.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. My question was actually similar to Representative Liebling's about the coordination with other health insurance coverage. And as this bill moves along, I think we might want to look at 1.15 and just expand it a little, because I understand your last explanation to Representative Albright is really about physician referrals and feedback systems. But I think it's important for the RFP that MDH issues that it also include the referral to other sources of coverage if they're available to the person calling.
This is Jensen. Is that a question or
It was a suggestion that as this moves along, they look at just clarifying that to me, because I think that expanding the resources by using existing coverage when it's available is good. And most people don't know what their health insurance does or doesn't cover, and you're a great place to start.
Thank you. So do we have any further questions? All right. So Representative Mann renews her motion that House File 350 is be recommended to be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Madam Chair, just a point of clarification. Do we just in terms of where the bill will go after Ways and Means, and I apologize, I've interceded here, but just didn't get to you in time, but just where would it go after Ways and Means, do you know?
Well, that is at the choice of the chair of Ways and Means.
Okay.
All right, thank you. So all in favor again?
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Representative Mann, your first bill is on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you so much. Okay, our next, Chair Liebling.
Madam Chair, thank you. I just wanted to make a comment here. I've noticed a bit of a pattern in this committee of some members interrupting the chair, and I just want to call that out, especially when we're in the middle of a vote. I mean, it is customary to, I understand that sometimes something moves a little fast and you miss it, but I do think that we need to get in the habit of letting the chair finish statements before we jump in, and I just wanted to call that out because it's happened a number of times in this committee. Thank you.
So noted. Okay, Representative Representative Edison, I know you. Okay, we're going to allow Representative Edison to move her bill.
Madam Chair, I move that House File 331 be recommended for re-referral to the Committee on Commerce.
All right, the bill is before us. Please introduce your bill.
Great. And before I do that, I have Girl Scout cookies on the table. This is my first bill before the committee. They are from Edina Highlands 5th grade class, the Girl Scout Troop 16885. So please have some and do not, if you don't have some, they might be disappointed. All right, so thank you, Madam Chair and members. It is my honor and privilege to present House File 331 today. This bill would increase the age people can be sold tobacco products from 18 to 21 in the state of Minnesota. This idea is so popular, it's become a movement with the name Tobacco 21. I wanted to carry this bill because in May of 2017, Edina, my own city, became the first local community in our state to pass Tobacco 21. I was very involved with the local effort, organizing community education sessions, advocating, activating local stakeholders, and testifying to our city council. Since then, 20 other Minnesota cities and counties have followed Edina to protect the youth and their communities as well. Nationally, 6 states and over 400 cities and counties have passed Tobacco 21. It's sweeping over every part of this country. This was also important to my predecessor, Dario Anselmo, a Republican. I'm confident this is a bipartisan public health issue we can all tackle together. Like Representative Halverson said, we share a crisis of youth nicotine addiction. No amount of nicotine, no matter how it's delivered, is safe for our kids. Teachers, parents, students, and schools tell me too many young people are using Juul and other very addictive tobacco products. The tobacco industry aggressively targets our kids. With e-cigarettes and flavored high nicotine products, we are seeing the first rise in youth tobacco rates in a generation. We cannot sit by and watch our kids develop lifetime addictions. It is time for us to stand up for our youth. Tobacco 21 will prevent youth tobacco use. It will save lives. The National Academy of Medicine found Tobacco 21 would have considerable impact on delaying cigarette smoking, stating, if someone is not a regular tobacco user by 25, it is highly unlikely that she or he will become one. Tobacco 21 is the best tool we have for making that age of initiation higher. By raising the age, we can also help remove tobacco products from our high schools and middle schools. Most teens who use e-cigarettes and other tobacco get them through friends and classmates. There are plenty of 18-year-olds in high schools, but there are very few 21-year-olds. Raising the age will reduce teens' ability to buy tobacco products themselves or to access them through friends and classmates. Tobacco 21 blocks Big Tobacco's pipeline into our schools. There is a broad support for this movement, and Minnesota can join in leading states by raising the age to 21 this year. The testifiers here today, and there are many, will speak to the research on Tobacco 21 and talk about how tobacco and e-cigarettes have impacted their own lives. First, let me take a minute to walk through the bill. Section 1 adds e-cigarettes and charter schools to the section pertaining to use of tobacco in schools. Section 2 updates the definition of a tobacco product shop to reflect the New Age standard. Under Section 7, the requirements for compliance checks remain essentially the same. However, the bill includes a new state reporting requirement to improve accountability and enforcement. Section 10 requires proper signage in locations where tobacco is sold and enhances age verification requirements. Section 11 updates our current definitions to ensure we're covering e-cigarettes. A number of sections deal with penalties. Instead of going through them section by section, I think it'll be easier if I summarize them. First and foremost, my bill removes penalties for underage use, possession, and purchase of tobacco products. You may have heard of these so-called PUP penalties. This is a critical part of the bill. This policy is about holding persons 21 and over, primarily licensed retailers, accountable when they sell or give products to underage persons. It's also about holding accountable an industry that profits off of addiction and disease. This is not about punishing our children. I'm happy to report that nearly all Minnesota communities removed PUP penalties when they passed Tobacco 21. We've also reduced the penalties for individuals who sell or give products to persons under 21, making it a petty misdemeanor instead of a misdemeanor for a first offense, and a misdemeanor instead of a gross misdemeanor for a repeat violation within 5 years. Penalties remain for a person who gives an underage person a fake ID, and an underage person caught using a fake ID will face an alternative penalty path. The licensing provisions increase administrative penalties on tobacco license holders. These administrative penalties have not been raised in years, so we're essentially right-sizing them. Local units of government can use these penalty payments to support compliance and enforcement. Thank you for considering this bill. Tobacco 21 is about protecting kids and saving lives. In the face of a youth nicotine epidemic, Tobacco 21 is the right thing to do. I'd also just like to note for the committee, the Center for Disease and Control and Prevention just released a report today encouraging communities to pass Tobacco 21.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Representative Edelson. So you have your first testifier of many. Could you please introduce yourself and share with us who you represent?
I sure can. Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for holding this hearing today. I'm Pat McCone, Senior Director of Health Promotion and Policy for the American Lung Association, based out of lovely Duluth. It will be an interesting drive home. The most recent community to pass T21, the first and the most recent. I'm here representing the Minnesotans for a Smoke-Free Generation, an amazing coalition of partners working together for years to reduce the harms from tobacco, which resulted in some of our historic lows of youth smoking, cigarette smoking rates. And who would have figured e-cigarettes? As you've heard, we are facing new challenges, and they're not going to end here and today. The same 2017 survey that said we found a record low of smoking also said we have lost ground with youth tobacco use. It's up, and it's primarily due to e-cigarettes. The tobacco industry is no doubt still targeting our kids, and none of our kids are immune from these pressures. I'd like to point out or show you a couple of the more popular devices. This is a Juul. It's not a jump drive. It's a Juul. It's very much packaged like an iPhone. It actually goes into a USB port to charge it, and this is what kids are. This is a very popular item with youth. It's extremely efficient in nicotine delivery. I think you've heard it several times today. One Juul pod equivalent to a pack of cigarettes. I don't know about you, but when I was in high school, which was a long time ago, the smokers really never smoked a pack a day. It was one before school, one at lunch hour, down the alley, behind the barn, wherever it was, but it wasn't a pack a day. This is a whole new phenomenon of nicotine delivery. The Surgeon General says Juul is driving the youth nicotine epidemic. Epidemic. It comes in flavorings like mango, cucumber, mint, creme brulee. Yummy sounding. Each pod, again, contains as much nicotine as a pack of cigarettes. Through these very beautiful designs, because this is a beautiful device, it really is, high nicotine content, aggressive advertising, candy-like flavors, big tobacco is climbing right back into our kids' backpacks and leading to lifetime customers and addiction. And while Juul wants you to believe they're not big tobacco, last year, in December, Altria, that's their new name, they were Philip Morris, Altria sounds more like a fabric softener, purchased 25% of stake in Juul for $12.8 billion. Okay. This is big tobacco at its worst. In exchange, Juul gets top shelf retail space next to Marlboro, distribution in logistical support. The deal gives Juul access to Altria's sales network of 230,000 retail locations. Small business in bed with big tobacco. Juul has a large market share, but we're seeing tons of different e-cigarette brands coming onto the market and into the hands of Minnesota youth. Just a couple weeks ago, I was in Brainerd, and I have to tell you, this was the product that schools were confiscating. This looks like a highlighter or a lipstick or a lip gloss. This is Soren. This is also extremely popular with youth. I know you would not think this is an efficient, effective nicotine delivery device. And as I said, they're going to continue to change because you know what it's like with youth. What's trendy today is not trendy tomorrow. So let's not forget that far too many of our kids are still using cigarettes, and as we heard in earlier testimony, use of these devices increases their risk to going to combustibles by 50%. We must address tobacco in all of its forms. We can't play any more whack-a-mole with the tobacco industry. Let's do this. Thankfully, there are steps we can take to protect young people from addiction, and that is starting with raising the age to 21. I thought it was very, very true. There are not a lot of 21-year-olds in our high schools, but there are a lot of 18-year-olds. Almost 95% of adult smokers start by age 21. Preventing addiction, we've got to keep people from starting before they're already addicted. Raising the age will help do that. Increasing the gap between kids and those who can buy tobacco will keep it out of our high schools and out of our middle schools. Because their brains aren't fully developed yet, I leveraged that as a mom for many years, even while my kids were in college. Your brain isn't fully developed yet, dear. I think we will help make that decision. They don't fully develop until age 25. Yeah. They now recognize that. We'll help keep nicotine out of their bodies and brains as long as possible. States have the power to regulate the sale, the age of sale of tobacco products, and several already have. I like to say Minnesota leads, but we have to hurry up and follow. The American Lung Association just a week ago released our annual report card on tobacco, and we graded states on clean indoor air, taxes, funding, and for the first time we've added Tobacco 21 because we feel it's so important that we need to include it in our annual report card. Minnesota has the lousy grade of F in T21. Let's work together to raise that grade to A, and proudly we'll be able to say that in our next year's report card that we've raised the grade and we're passing. Thank you so much.
And thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Dr. Caleb Schultz. Please introduce yourself for the record and begin with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Caleb Schultz, and I'm a physician specializing in anesthesiology at Hennepin Healthcare. I'm also a member of the Twin Cities Medical Society Board of Directors, the Minnesota Medical Association Policy Council, and the Minnesota Public Health Association Policy and Advocacy Committee. Those three organizations are part of a huge coalition in support of this statewide movement for Tobacco 21. Also, by way of introduction, I am the former 2010 Health LA Representative Liebling. During that session, we worked on the Physician Payment Sunshine Act for a state-based version of that. It was subsequently taken up into the Affordable Care Act and became national law. So I want to thank you for each of you members who work with folks interested in policy and that you have a major impact. So I used to live in Edina, where I was part of the Community Health Commission, and we worked closely together to pass Minnesota's very first Tobacco 21 policy. And I got involved because as a physician, I care about protecting the next generation from tobacco. The best way to stop addiction is by preventing our youth from ever starting. I now live in Minnetonka, and last year encouraged them to pass Tobacco 21 too. Unfortunately, I cannot cover 850-something Minnesota cities myself, so that's why I need your help. One very positive thing about Tobacco 21 is youth involvement, who we'll get to hear from. Young people throughout the state are making their voices heard about creating a smoke-free generation. And that's really what this is about. Kids realizing what their lives can and will be like if they stay tobacco-free. Now, kids know that cigarettes are bad for them, that make their clothes stink, their teeth yellow, etc. But with e-cigarettes, there's a huge misperception about the dangers, especially since it smells and tastes like mango and candies and, you know, our new personal favorite now, right, unicorn poop or whatever. But research shows that young people underestimate e-cig's addictive nature, and some don't even realize it contains nicotine. The nation's top doctor, Surgeon General Jerome Adams, who is also an anesthesiologist like me, and the FDA Commissioner, Dr. Scott Gottlieb, both say that youth e-cigarette use has become an epidemic. The Surgeon General even went so far as to issue a rare public health advisory on the subject. Now, medical professionals worry about e-cigarettes because brain development continues into the early 20s. And youth are more susceptible to addiction because their brains continue and are still forming. Nicotine also harms the adolescent brain itself, interrupting learning and priming young brains for addiction to cigarettes and other addictive substances. If we can prevent students from accessing tobacco and introducing nicotine into their brains, we can prevent addiction itself. Our kids are relying on you to raise the age. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony.
Okay, our next testifier will be Dr. Andrew Bush.
Please introduce yourself and continue with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members, I'm Dr. Andrew Bush. I'm a clinical psychologist and researcher specializing in research on tobacco cessation. I direct the Tobacco Dependence Clinic at Hennepin Healthcare, and I'm also an associate professor of medicine at the University of Minnesota. I wholeheartedly support the cessation bill you just discussed. I regularly refer patients there, and I just want to reiterate, if this was lost, it would really hit the poor and underserved folks in Minnesota the hardest, and that would only make worse the tobacco disparities, tobacco-related health disparities we already have in this state. So thanks for everyone, those who supported it. I'm here primarily to talk about the Tobacco 21 bill. Tobacco 21 attacks addiction at the front end. By preventing addiction, fewer people will need to fight the long and often painful battle to conquer nicotine. Tobacco 21 is predicted to have a tremendous intake on youth tobacco uptake. The National Academy of Medicine predicts that raising the tobacco age to 21 would reduce smoking uptake from 15 to 17-year-olds by 25%. That's a huge difference, and it would prevent thousands of Minnesotans from ever becoming regular smokers in the first place. I don't work with teens in my clinic at Hennepin. I mostly work with older adults who already have tobacco-related disease, such as cancer or heart disease. And most of them have struggled to quit for years and failed before coming to me. The majority of my patients started smoking in their teens and have this deep regret and lament about starting smoking in the first place. Many of them report becoming regular smokers specifically because tobacco products were so readily available in their environment. By making tobacco harder to access for teens, we can help prevent the next generation of addiction. It's very important that e-cigarettes are included in this Tobacco 21 legislation. The newest e-cigarettes deliver nicotine in an amount and at a speed that is just as addicting as combustible cigarettes. E-cigarette use among teens has been soaring, as has been mentioned. Just in the last year, it's doubled. A lot of people have talked about Juul, the most popular e-cigarette product. One thing that's very important to remember as we think about Tobacco 21 is that most teens, 63%, who use Juul don't know it contains nicotine at all. So most of the users of the product containing high levels of nicotine do not know it contains nicotine. I give a lot of seminars on tobacco around the cities, and these days the question and answer at those events are almost always dominated with questions about e-cigarettes, usually from concerned parents asking about how to get their kids to stop or prevent their other children from starting in the first place. For young people, e-cigarettes are just a new path to decades of nicotine addiction. Thank you for your time, and please support Tobacco 21.
All right, and thank you for your testimony. My next testifier is, so listen, I am like notorious for mispronouncing people's names, so I'm going to do my best here to make this work. Danette Sebo.
Very close. Sebo.
Sebo.
Okay. Thank you.
Please introduce yourself and begin with your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Moran and members. My name is Danette Sebo. I am the proud principal of Duluth East High School. From what we have been seeing at Duluth East and in speaking with my colleagues in schools across our state, I believe protecting our youth from tobacco is more urgent than ever. I've been part of the team addressing the epidemic of e-cigarette use in Minnesota schools. We've presented information to families, trained our school staff, and are constantly working to educate students on the dangers of e-cigarettes and tobacco. We will continue these efforts for as long as it takes. We need an all-hands-on-deck response to this epidemic. Despite teen e-cigarette use increasingly being discussed, I believe it's much more prevalent than most people think. They're very easy for students to get, and challenging for teachers and school staff to detect. The slim devices and sweet smell make vaping very easily concealable. Nearly every day at East, we confiscate them. Some days, it has been more than a dozen. Each day at our school, I see firsthand what the national and state data is showing. The number of teens using e-cigarettes across all student groups has skyrocketed over the last year. In more than my 20 years as an educator, I have never seen anything like this. Many students and even parents don't know the vast majority of e-cigarettes contain significant amounts of nicotine. Our students and young people unknowingly are becoming addicted. This year, none of the liquid we confiscated at East had zero nicotine. In fact, most of the bottles or pods had the highest level of nicotine available for purchase. As the physicians shared in teens, studies show nicotine can inhibit brain development and increases the risk of psychiatric disorders and cognitive impairment in later life. After being caught using in school, many of our students say they know it's bad, but they're so addicted they can't go the hours of the school day without using. They tell us they do not know how to quit. Tobacco 21 would have a tremendous impact on this because seniors who are 18 would no longer be able to purchase e-cigarettes for themselves and their friends. That's why I encouraged our Duluth City Council to raise the tobacco age to 21 in Duluth. Just last month, we passed that policy. We're doing our part, but we need the state to do more to protect all Minnesota students in all of our school districts. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next testifier is Maria Gonzalez. And can we have the next testifier, Anna Hollinger? Yes. Come on down. You be the next to testify. You can just sit behind the testifier desk. Thank you so much. Please introduce yourself.
Good afternoon, Chair Moran and committee members. My name is Maria Regan Gonzalez, and I am the mayor of Richfield. And I also previously served in our Richfield City Council. I am also a public health professional who works at Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota and want to make sure you know that we are also here expressing our organization's strong support for Tobacco 21. In June, Richfield became the 10th Minnesota city to pass Tobacco 21. We passed T21 to send a message that we value our young people above the tobacco industry profits. We also hope to create momentum for statewide action, which is just how it happened with the Freedom to Breathe movement. Richfield couldn't wait for the state. We had to lead the way. To date, we have 23 cities and counties that have passed T21 here in Minnesota. And while many of the communities are in the metro, they're also inclusive of Otter Tail County, Duluth, Beltrami County, and some of our neighbors to the south, like North Mankato and St. Peter. These local policies cover over 22% of Minnesota's population, and you can make it 100%. As a Latina, the tobacco industry targets people of color and limited incomes in this country. E-cigarettes have received a lot of publicity, and they're a huge problem. But there's also cigars, cigarillos, smokeless tobacco that specifically target my community and other diverse demographics. That means it is our kids, my friends, my family members, and my community who are more likely to become lifelong sufferers of big tobacco. You can help address these inequities by making sure all kids are covered by Tobacco 21. Unfortunately, due to the snow, Mayor Mark Den from North Mankato was unable to make it. So I have his testimony here. I don't know if somebody can help and pass this out to you all. But his testimony has been provided, and I wanted to highlight just a couple items from that. Last February, North Mankato became the 6th Tobacco 21 city. Their city, like Richfield, also prides themselves on the Minnesota values of supporting our youth and quality of life. With that in mind, they also pursued Tobacco 21, and during the process heard a powerful testimony from students asking them to help them avoid addiction. Mayor Den also debunks a couple of common opposition arguments in his testimony, including that this policy will lead to financial ruin. He said, "We've heard the same arguments from restaurants in 2005 when the Clean Indoor Act was adopted locally, but there are more restaurants than ever in our cities today." So in closing, I wholeheartedly agree with Mayor Den, and especially on this point. It is our communities that have led the grassroots efforts to help the state make difficult yet important decisions. Please take heed on this great momentum and adopt Tobacco 21 to save our children from a lifelong addiction.
Thank you so much for your testimony, Anna. And after Anna, we have Robert Hansen.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Anna Grace Hottinger, and I am a 10th grader in Shoreview. Amongst my peers, JUULs are very common, and many think it's very safe and cool. It's super easy for kids to conceal these devices and through social groups. Frequently, teachers, and even my own parents, mistake these e-cigarettes for flash drives and other commonly found items in backpacks. An example of this was this summer, I believe, I found a JUUL and brought it home, and my mother thought it was a hard drive the whole time it was sitting next to my bed for a solid 2 months, though I never used it. Some students even have clothing that are meant for vaping, such as a hoodie, where e-cigs are disguised in the drawstring. So this is an e-cig hoodie, and you can inhale it and exhale, though it is very hidden, and I wouldn't have even noticed myself. The thinking that vaping is cool has caused conflict in even my own school community. Our bathrooms are frequently locked due to many students using them as a place to vape. That's bad enough, but for students who aren't able to access bathrooms easily, it can be very difficult. Last spring, I had a hip surgery, and it was so hard to use the restroom because I had to go all the way downstairs to use the restrooms because they were locked. Ever since 8th grade, I have participated in high school teams and clubs, and I have known plenty of 18-year-olds, whereas I have known no 21-year-olds on those teams. 18-year-olds can make it much, much easier for 12 through 17-year-olds to have access to e-cigs and all tobacco products. I support Tobacco 21 statewide and would like to see Minnesota added to the states that are taking this step. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Anna, and for the awareness, too, of your hoodie and what it includes. Who would have known?
Honestly. And there are backpacks, too.
Wow. Well, thank you so much. Robert Hansen and Latricia Vito. Please, introduce yourself.
My name is Robert Hansen. I'm a teacher at Henry Sibley High School. I'm also the creator and director of a program called ALMAS. Anglos Latinos Motivados a Superarse, which is also loosely translated as Anglos Latinos Motivated to Succeed. Based on my master's thesis program to increase the graduation rates and take down the dropout rate of high school students. I can tell you that it's been supremely successful. We now have eliminated the gap of graduation in our school. We have a third of the population of Latinos. Part of that is because we have increased the population of helping the community, definitely increasing the support of the community and parents and strengthening that community and health issues specifically. One of those purposes is tobacco. Tobacco, as stated previously by the mayor, oftentimes is directed specifically at Latinos, but also minorities. And part of that is dulce de leche. I can tell you specifically, my son, 8 years old at the time, knew specifically working with anti-tobacco, wanted to try dulce de leche because that's his favorite flavor of ice cream. In order of brevity, I know that you have many testifiers in time. I would just like to introduce you to my president, who has a quick statement. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Introduce yourself, please, and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, I'm Ozzy Sparza.
Let's move this. Yeah, thank you.
I'm Ozzy Sparza. I'm a junior at Henry Sibley High School, and I'm president of ALMAS. And I would just like to state that our bathrooms have essentially become vape rooms at this point. So as part of ALMAS, we just wanted to state that we fully support raising the tobacco age sales to 21.
Thank you so much. Latricia, along with Bruce Neustadt. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Latricia Vito, and I serve as the Health Policy and Advocacy Manager at North Point Health and Wellness Center in North Minneapolis, and I am also a Minneapolis Park Commissioner at Large. I'm going to keep it really brief. I'm here to just talk about how the tobacco industry really targets communities of color, particularly the African American community. Big tobacco is not an equal opportunity adversary. They especially target African American youth. They advertise more in our neighborhoods and in our magazines. They put menthol in tobacco products to hook us. They target us with cigars, cigarillos, chewing tobacco. As a result, many communities of color are more likely to suffer and die from tobacco-related diseases. This has to stop. I mean, it really has to stop. And I'm a believer that Tobacco 21 can help put the brakes on this huge disparity. So I'm here today to urge you to move this forward and support our kids to keep this moving forward, because our kids need this to help them live healthier lives. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. All right, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Bruce Newstead. I work for the members of the Minnesota Retailers Association. We're a collection of retailers across the state, including some that sell legal tobacco products. I appreciate the opportunity to appear today. I want to just voice that I'm not in support or opposed to T21. Just want to offer a little bit of context, five quick points to the committee as you consider this bill and T21. Again, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here. Wanted to point out that just there's an opportunity here to recognize that raising the age does impact other products at retailers, especially among border cities. So as tobacco sales would maybe flow to across the border, that would have an impact on other products such as gasoline, food, and groceries. Secondarily, we spent a lot of time looking at tobacco, T21, at the local level, and one of the things local retailers have always said is, why just prohibit the sale? Why not consider the consumption? So I offer today just an observation from retailers that sometimes we feel like this is sort of half a solution when we just prohibit the sale but don't address consumption. Thirdly, the penalties in the bill are somewhat steep. Retailers that I know try really, really hard to follow the law, are really good in compliance. In fact, Minnesota's nation leading in compliance. And these penalties likely will just not dissuade those that are conscientiously breaking the law, but just simply harm those that have made honest mistakes. Fourth, should Minnesota move to a 21 age on tobacco? We'd love to see the state think about tobacco like it thinks about alcohol, relative to kind of parity and continuity across the state. And then finally, a compliment to the author. One of the frustrations we have is a lot of times we don't see tobacco solutions address what we call social sources or those that furnish tobacco products. There's a nice word in this bill that uses the word furnish, which I think takes a step towards saying it's important that we look at those that outside of retailers where folks might get tobacco, including family, friends, and neighbors. So, Madam Chair, thanks for the opportunity this afternoon to testify on the bill. I appreciate it.
And thank you for your testimony. Genevieve Plumador, along with Capo Rourke. Okay, please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Genevieve Plumador on behalf of Juul Labs. Chair Moran and members of the committee, on behalf of Juul Labs, thank you for the opportunity to submit testimony in strong support of House File 331, legislation that would increase the minimum age of purchasing of tobacco, alternative nicotine, and vapor products from 18 to 21. Juul Labs' mission is to improve the lives of the world's 1 billion adult smokers by eliminating cigarettes. This mission is driven by the fact that that smoking is the number one cause of preventable death worldwide. In the United States alone, smoking kills approximately 480 people every year. We share a common goal with policymakers, regulators, parents, school officials, and community stakeholders: prevent the use of tobacco and vapor products, including Juul, by America's youth. We are committed to stopping youth access of Juul products, and no young person or non-nicotine user should ever try Juul. In November of 2018, we began implementing a number of significant voluntary actions as outlined in our action plan, which you should have received a handout in your packet. The plan addresses youth access, appeal, and the use of Juul products. This included a major reset of how Juul Labs markets and sells its products, requiring automated sales controls to limit the purchase of certain flavored products to adults 21 plus. Currently, we only sell these products on our website through Juul.com, where we utilize sophisticated automated technology supported by third parties to ensure purchasers of 21 plus and to prevent bulk purchases. We also eliminated our Facebook and Instagram accounts and are developing new technology to further limit youth access and use. We are committed to working with lawmakers, the Surgeon General, the FDA, state attorneys generals, local municipalities, and community organizations as a transparent and responsible partner in this effort. We believe that these efforts, combined with increasing the minimum age to purchase tobacco and vapor products to 21, will drastically reduce youth access of Juul products. At Juul Labs, we are focused on creating an alternative to combustible cigarettes that provide an off-ramp for adult smokers. We recognize that we cannot do this without also actively trying to pass proven legislative measures that prevent youth from using tobacco products, including Juul. States and jurisdictions that have passed Tobacco 21 legislation have realized tremendous results. In 2005, Needham, Massachusetts became the first locality to pass T21 in the country. 4 years following that law's enactment, a youth survey showed an almost 50% decline in high school student smoking rates, and the city of Chicago found a 36% reduction among 18 to 20-year-olds after enacting similar legislation. Therefore, Juul Labs strongly supports House Bill 331 and urges the committee to vote favorably.
Wow. Well, thank you. Thank you for your testimony and your support of the bill. Cap O'Rourke and Chair Liebling.
Madam Chair, are we asking questions now or should we wait till the end?
I think it's okay to ask now.
Okay, because I just wanted to ask the last testifier, Ms. Plumador from Juul Labs. Sorry, if you would just come back to the table for just a moment. So we heard testimony earlier in this hearing that there can be enough nicotine in one of these devices as in a whole pack of cigarettes. Mm-hmm. Can you explain why Juul has to be built in such a way that it delivers that much nicotine in one refill?
Ms. Plumador.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Liebling. I don't know if I can answer your question, but I can try to explain how the product is made. So this is what's considered a closed system. So the Juul should only be able to, you should only be able to put a Juul pod into a Juul. And so within one of these pods is about 200 puffs, which equals about a pack of cigarettes. I don't know the reason for why it is that way. I could find out a little bit more about what went into the R&D of developing it. But my assumption would be that, you know, if you've got a Juul, you have more control of, you know, how many puffs you take to get the satisfaction that you need if you're a smoker versus a cigarette. You literally, you know, most of the time will finish the cigarette. And so it gives the consumer an opportunity to, you know, manage how much they ingest.
Well, Madam Chair.
Yes, Chair Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you know, that's very interesting, and I don't know a whole lot about these devices, and that, in fact, is why I'm asking. But it just seems to me that when you have people who are smokers, part of the whole addiction of smoking is not only the nicotine, but sort of the behavioral piece around that is what makes it so difficult. And so if you then have a device where you can get a really high hit of the nicotine with the same behavior as with a burning cigarette, or, you know, you're getting more per behavior, it seems to me that that is creating a real concern. And from what we've heard here today, I am very concerned about that, and not only for the children who are starting to use these devices and so on, and I can only take you at your word that your company is trying to, you know, deal with this. But I think that the product, by delivering so much nicotine so rapidly, I'm very concerned that it's really dangerous. And I think you'd do well to address that because, you know, it may be that people have control. I mean, there's less extraneous stuff. Maybe there's more control, in a sense, over how much nicotine is being delivered. But boy, there sure is a big dose that can be delivered all at one time, and that is very concerning. So sure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah. If I may, Madam Chair. The product was developed by two gentlemen who were smokers and were addicted to smoking and didn't want to have the stigma that's associated with combustible cigarettes, and with all of the data that we have, that it is the number one cause of preventable death. And so they were design students in Stanford
getting their master's, and they designed this product because they wanted to find an alternative and an off-ramp for their tobacco addiction. So that's where the design came from.
All right. Thank you so much. Okay. Mr. O'Rourke, please reintroduce yourself again.
Madam Chair, members, again, my name is Cap O'Rourke, and I represent the Independent Vapor Retailers of Minnesota. I have a couple comments, and Chair Liebling, I'm going to address your question there as well with regards to the nicotine strength, because I think I can give you a little bit more context. Our major concern with this legislation is, as Mr. Newstead's pointed out, is simply continuity. We have small businesses that have sold these products for the last 7 years, and throughout the state we have kind of differing patchwork of laws and ordinances. And so as we move forward with this, I think if the state is going to adopt T21, having a comprehensive approach in which the small business owners can understand exactly the parameters in which they can and cannot operate would be very useful. Our products that are sold in vapor stores, the majority of our stores do not actually sell Juul products. Our products are open system, which means they are refillable tanks. They are often much larger, much more difficult to conceal. They range in nicotine strength anywhere from zero to, I would say the very high end would be 24 milligrams, and to put that into context, that's about 2.4%. Other products on the market that are sold in convenience stores can go all the way up to 5%. But our average of the products that are sold in our stores is anywhere from 0.3 to 0.6% nicotine. As to Chair Liebling's question about why the nicotine is so high in some of these pod devices, with vapor products and e-cigarettes, there are two components. You have the battery and you have the liquid. So it's a matter of how strong a battery you are using compared with the liquid that the amount of nicotine. And so if you have a high-powered battery, you can often have much lower amounts of nicotine. If you have a low-powered battery, sometimes for the users to get the nicotine feel, you are going to need to have a higher amount of nicotine. Nicotine that is vaped and the way it interacts with your bloodstream is different than that of a cigarette. When smokers smoke a cigarette, they get an initial spike, and then they continue smoking, and they're kind of chasing that spike. Vape takes a lot longer to get into the bloodstream. So you will see vapers who will puff away initially to build up their nicotine blood level to the point where they feel satiated, and then over time, it is not as they don't need the same nicotine levels. This is why if you are using an open system device that you typically buy at a vape store for a period of time and you have quit your cigarettes, your nicotine strength will start to walk down. You may start at 1% and start work your way down to 0.8%, 0.6%, 0.3%, and eventually zero. There are a number of adults who still use zero on a regular basis because, as I said, it is the physical hand-to-mouth that they get addicted to. With regards to the question that was asked earlier about if these products are regulated, actually, they are completely the FDA now has regulations in which all manufacturers have to submit a complete list of their products by bottle size, ingredient, or bottle size, nicotine strength, and the product name. And they also have to submit a full list of ingredients to the FDA. That just happened this last winter, so it is permanently new, but all products that are on the market right now should have submitted their list of ingredients to the FDA. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Is Todd Hill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, and my testimony will be really brief. For the record, my name is Todd Hill of Hill Capital Strategies, and I'm here on behalf of my client, Altria Client Services, which is the parent company of Philip Morris. And I am here today to testify in support of House File 331. And I have a letter from my client that pages want to distribute to the members of the committee, that would be great. And that was the extent of my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Is there anyone else from the audience who would like to testify? Representative New.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think my first question may be for Ms. Plumador. I think she sort of answered it, but went very quickly, and I'm not sure that I caught it all. As we were discussing earlier in the discussion, I had a question. Just if there are statistics of usage of tobacco products among that 18 to 20-year-old group as opposed to those who begin after the age of 21.
Ms. Plumador.
Does that make sense? You got close to that. In the statistics that you gave.
I don't think that I'm probably the best person, maybe. Can you repeat the question, maybe? I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is just the statistics on tobacco usage among that 18 to 20-year-old group versus those who would start 21 or later.
Ms. Plumador.
And you're looking for the number.
Yeah, do we have statistics on that? I thought, or maybe Ms. McCone or Dr. Schultz might have a better idea.
Chair, I actually would call Mrs. Mullahan to come up to the testifiers table from Clearway, Minnesota. Okay,
thank you.
Please introduce yourself to the testifiers and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Molly Moylan with Clearway, Minnesota. And what we know is that 95% of adult smokers started before they turned 21.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's a significant statistic. So let me say I'm very sympathetic to this bill, and particularly, you know, we talk a lot about bending the cost curve in healthcare, and certainly smoking contributes to that. I don't think there's any disagreement on that idea. I do, however, have some concerns about taking away a current right from legal adults. I certainly have some concern about that. And so my question to you, Representative Adelson, if you would consider, as was done, you know, when the drinking age was raised to 21 in the 80s, there was a phase-in on that so that those who were already able to purchase alcohol continued to have that right until they turned 21, and there was that phase-in for people who were younger. And certainly, I think, I mean, we would all agree, we don't want these products in schools and things like this, but I'm wondering if you would consider a phase-in on that as this moves through the process.
Representative Edison.
Chair Moran. Representative New, I think I would love to talk offline with you about that. I think that's not a bad idea. Ultimately, the goal of this bill is to, as you heard from all the testifiers, I think the students and teachers are really impactful, that the goal is to really tackle youth addiction here. And it has become an epidemic. And I think that I would love to talk with you offline about that.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for Representative Edelson, on page 7, you talk about exceptions. And in other prohibitive-type language, we oftentimes recognize the contributions made by our military service personnel, particularly when they have the availability to either liquor or tobacco in other states and or other countries. I'm just wondering if this should be undertaken with this legislation as well, in recognition of the precedent in other pieces of legislation for our military personnel having access to, in a sense, charged with protecting our country, but yet not having the availability to buy a drink or purchase cigarettes in this state as opposed to others where they might be stationed.
Representative Ellison.
Chair Moran, Representative Albright, I would just say that the military really, I mean, I come from a military family, that the military doesn't encourage addiction, and really I struggle with that one, honestly, instinctively, but I could work with you to talk with you to understand your point a little bit more as this bill moves on.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize for not being here. I had a bill up in the Education Committee until recently, but I'm glad I'm here at least for this part. I don't have a question so much, maybe a couple suggestions for Representative Adelson. You know, I would caution you, I guess, against considering a phase-in of this. I don't know how that would work, you know, whether it would, like, grandfather in people who are under the age of 21 at the time this is adopted, but I think from a public health standpoint, that would sort of undercut the whole purpose of the bill. I mean, it was referred to the right to use tobacco products. There's nowhere in the Constitution that it says it's like that's a protected right. It's actually, it's not even a choice, I would say. It's an addiction, as you said. These are products that are manufactured specifically to be as addictive as possible. So I don't think we want to undercut the purpose of this bill. We approved cessation funding also, from what I understand, in this committee today. So I think we need to encourage anyone who is under the age of 21 and is already addicted to smoke to take advantage of those services before we talk about somehow phasing them into this bill. I don't think that's really a sound approach. I liked your response on the comment about the military. From what I understand, the military generally supports legislation like this because, as you said, they don't want to encourage addiction. So I think you have a great bill. I think you should keep it as it is to the extent you can.
Chair Moran, I also like to have Mrs. Mullahan from Clearway, Minnesota, just speak to maybe what other states are doing since this is work she's been doing for quite a while.
Please proceed. Chair Moran and members, in terms of the grandfathering question, it has been done in other states and cities, but in a lot of cases, the retailers themselves say, please don't do a grandfathering approach. It's just too hard for us to implement year after year. So at the request of some retailers and states, that has not moved forward. So just wanted to respond with that while it may seem like a good idea, it's really hard to implement from a retailer standpoint.
Okay. Representative Pinto.
And I'll be really quick, Madam Chair. I just two things. One is that as I look at the bill, so this is great. Thank you, Representative Adelson. I'm a big fan. But I just want to know two things. One is that in the bill, there's a note. As I look at this, it looks like this would not prohibit somebody under the age of 21 to sell to somebody under the age of 21. So I'm thinking, you know, a 20-year-old is working at a convenience store would actually not be prohibited from selling to an 18 or 19-year-old. I may be just misreading this, but if our research team could just look, assuming this is moving on to the next committee, at that point, because as I'm reading this, I think that it actually takes that away. It prohibits anybody 21 or older from selling, giving, furnishing tobacco, et cetera. So I'm just wondering about that. And then the other point is just I'm curious in the letter from the Minnesota Retailers Association, and we may not want to take the time now to get a response, but I'd love to, as it moves forward, just the comment about if Minnesota moves the sales age to 21 to adopt statewide treatment that would put tobacco products on par with how alcohol is treated. And I'm curious about what the Retailers Association has in mind for that. I could imagine a lot of different things, but I'm interested in what that might mean. And again, we may not want to do that right now, but I'd love to get the information from the Retailers Association as this moves forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you, Representative Pinto. And I think as this bill move on to commerce, those are some of the questions and answers that we can have there. Do we have any further questions from members? Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank all the testifiers. It was really compelling. And this has bipartisan broad support, so I really appreciate Representative Ellison bringing this forward and working on this bill and all of those who have been advocating for it. I visited our local high school in East Duluth and heard from a lot of parents and teachers and administrators about this crisis and epidemic, and they are so eager for us to take action on this. So I hope we can get this done this session. Thank you.
Yeah. And so I just want to close with this. This is an issue that has come before this body. I just want to share with you, as one of the testifiers stated, that, you know, when we was battling the menthol, we can get some correlation to this menthol and this whole e-cigarette and this Juul piece, because there was huge advertisement in our community, promotions of menthol within the community. And what came out of that was many generations of people addicted to tobacco. You know, and when we look at Juuls and what they have done with the potency of this one little stick, it's nothing but addiction. And the impact of that is huge health issues. Right now, we have some of the worst health disparities within the African-American community. And some of that, in so many ways, can be pinpointed to the uses of tobacco and how that impacts health from those who are smoking the cigarette to secondhand smoke
to also, there's also this like third hand piece where the smoke lingers in the curtains, in the couch, in the home. And so I just want to say thank you for bringing this bill forward. I'm just glad it didn't take 50, 60, 70 years for this to happen, right? And as we look forward to creating better outcomes of moving uphill, moving upstream in our decision-making in this body, this is exactly what this does. And the statistics tell us clearly that those who are addicted, it starts in high school, sometime in elementary school. It goes just that far back, and it's a lifelong addiction. So, again, Representative Edison, I just want to say thank you. This is definitely a bipartisan support, and I just, you know, Minnesota can do better, and I'm just glad that today is a part of us doing better. So, hearing no more further discussion, Representative Edison renews her motion that House File 331 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Commerce. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Say nay. The motion prevails. Thank you so much. That's our last bill. We are adjourned.